Santa Fe, welcome to Wake Up Call, your source in the morning for the world of Northern New Mexico at KSFR 101.1 FM. I'm Tom Trowbridge on this Tuesday, April 23rd, 2019.
I'm very pleased to be joined in the studio by Sam Hitt and on the phone by Dr. Ann McCampbell. Good morning, Sam. First of all, how you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks for inviting us. Really enjoyed the rain last night.
I think we all did. And Ann, good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you both on board. And Sam, you used to be with Wild Earth Guardians. Is that who you are with currently?
No, I'm not, but I did start that group back, in fact, 30 years ago. It was called Forest Guardians then. I do work closely with them, and they're doing great work. And in fact, as soon as I left, they started doing really great work. So,
well,
I'm not sure.
Are you consulting them, or what's your role in monitoring the Santa Fe National Forest?
Oh, we have another group here in Santa Fe. It's called the Santa Fe Forest Coalition.
Okay.
And if folks want to get some more information, they can go to that website just in your search engine, Santa Fe Forest Coalition. .org. Have a lot of good resources there, scientific reports. We have a tab on forest wisdom, which I think is really important. More people have to understand some of the incredible science that's coming out that is showing how our forests are, in effect, single organisms that are connected by these infinite biological pathways that, in fact, allow trees to communicate and interact in an intelligent way. Even though they don't have central nervous systems like us, they are able to communicate and take care of themselves.
And Anne, please identify your role in monitoring the Santa Fe National Forest.
Well, we've had a group since 1997, the Multiple Chemical Sensitivities Task Force, and we got involved in forest issues early on. Because for those of us that are sort of made sick, quote, by the modern world, having forests and a place to get away from car exhaust and, you know, hopefully pesticides and things like that was a very high priority. And in addition, because people that are chemically sensitive, along with lots of other people, are really adversely impacted by smoke from, you know, burning in the forest. And so we had started to comment on Forest Service projects going back many years.
And you're a medical doctor, too. That's what the doctor stands for.
That is what the doctor stands for, yes.
Very good. Sam, let's talk a little bit about the concept of forest wisdom. What is it?
Well, it's a relatively new but very old concept. It's the concept that forests are alive together. In fact, trees share resources. Older trees actually take care of their young by allowing space for roots, allowing space in their roots for the young to grow. When they die, to provide nutrients, or when they are very sick, to provide nutrients, not just to their own species like ponderosa pine, but other species as well. So it's an amazing system. We know the concept of Gaia, the idea of Dr. James Lovelock of about 50 years ago or so, that the entire Earth is alive in some sense, able to self-regulate the atmosphere, for example. And the same concept applies to forests as well. So our dry ponderosa pine forests have a kind of intelligence. And the intelligence is really expressed most articulately in the roots, in its below ground. And it's, you could say it's kind of a mindless mastery of the environment and of their evolutionary destiny.
And how are you trying to apply this to the operations of the Santa Fe National Forest here right alongside Santa Fe?
Well, this ecological understanding of forests really runs counter to the agricultural paradigm that the Forest Service operates under. So, of course, the Forest Service is under the Department of Agriculture. I was a farmer for 10 years. I grew vegetables, cut flowers, herbs, fruits for the farmer's market. I know how agriculture works. That's not how forests work. Forests are, again, interconnected beings. For example, Douglas fir during the wintertime will share nutrients with aspen, which is a deciduous species, which doesn't have leaves. During the summertime, when the aspens leaf out, they will share nutrients with Douglas fir. Now, that would seem to run contrary to evolution, right? No. It stabilizes the entire system, so it benefits both species. So there is a wisdom in cooperation, and that's what we have to respect in the forest. One of the really key damaging things the Forest Service is doing by applying this agricultural model is they are cutting down a tremendous number of the smaller trees. These are the trees of the future. Now, they don't know which trees are going to survive and which trees are going to be consumed by fire or bark beetle or, the changing climate. But the mother tree, for example, the ponderosa pine, of all its progeny, will know. And actually, that tree will be, the mother tree, or my friend Leroy Jackson called the grandfather tree, whatever the gender, is supplying nutrients in greater quantities to that tree that the mother tree knows has a better chance of surviving the changing climate. So the Forest Service doesn't know that, so they go cut down that tree. That is a serious problem. So, there are people who are working on ways to identify those survivor trees, I call, but that technology is not available yet.
And Anne, if you would, tell us a little bit about the recent discussion before the Santa Fe County Commission on the request to have the Santa Fe National Forest conduct an environmental impact statement on the areas that they plan on doing some thinning activity on.
Well, I think the first thing to understand is the definition of thinning. I think the average person hears, doing a little thinning in the forest, kind of like having your gardener come and trim your hedge and roses. It'll just tidy things up, and what could be the problem? But I think the problem is the idea that it's not just thinning, it's really repurposing the land from a forest to park-like areas. And I first learned about that in with the Jimez project, and kind of looking back, I think that was in 2012 or so. And I remember I couldn't believe what I was reading. Not only that, they said, certainly in some areas to remove 90% to 99% of the trees, and that the decision had been made and that the natural state of forest really wasn't a forest, that it was a park. And we have a lot of that kind of people saying, well, what were the forests like? And there's a real diversity of opinion about what that is. And then the point is, well, even no matter what they were like before, does that mean what it's good for them to be now? So I think going back, to the resolution, that the county commission, the Board of Commissioners, at least was looking at and calling on the Forest Service to conduct an environmental analysis. And we had many, many people speaking to the issue, and the vast majority were calling for an environmental impact statement, which is the highest order of environmental analysis, which, to me, just on plain face common sense, would mean this is necessary. This is a huge, huge impact. The plans for what the forest wants to do to the forest, which is practically remove the forest, at least in certain areas, seems to demand an environmental impact statement.
Yeah, just to jump in here, so Ann mentioned that HAMIS project. They did do an environmental impact statement under the National Environmental Policy Act. That was back in 2015. And what that gave was some benefits, including closing old logging roads that are bleeding sediment into local streams, replanting denuded riparian areas that have been overgrazed by livestock, and reintroducing beaver. So these are what they call mitigation measures. And under an environmental impact, they are mandatory. Environmental impact statement also requires that the agency look at all the science, not just the science that agrees with their preconceived ideas of what the forest should look like, as Ann was describing. And it also requires them to look at a range of alternatives and to evaluate those alternatives in an objective way, including an alternative that doesn't do anything. One of the key things here above the Forest of Santa Fe is our roadless areas. So roadless areas are eligible to be included as wilderness. There's been a long campaign to protect those roadless areas on the western slope of the Pecos Wilderness as wilderness. And if the Forest Service goes and clears trees, as Ann describes, up to 90% or more of the trees would be cleared, mostly smaller trees, but with high impacts, then that land would no longer be eligible for wilderness designation. So this is a serious problem. This is why we filed our lawsuit back 3 years ago, to ensure that those roadless lands were being given the consideration as potential wilderness, which the Forest Service had ignored up to that point.
And Sam and Ann, the County Commission did not, of course, adopt or call for Santa Fe National Forest EIS, an environmental impact statement, opting instead for an environmental assessment. And first of all, could you tell us the difference between an EIS and what was approved by the County Commission?
Well, I think, you know, Sam can better explain the nuances of NEPA. I think, you know, in any case, the county, it's a resolution, it's not binding, and so, you know, they're calling for a thorough environmental analysis.
So that's a step below an EIS, as you mentioned. So what is the real meaning of this to you, Sam?
You know, I think the real key here is that there's mandatory mitigation measures. So there's mandatory benefits to the environment if they do an environmental assessment, which is a mid-level type of assessment, and it's only designed to determine whether or not they should do a full environmental impact statement. But the mitigation measures under an EA or environmental assessment are discretionary. So that doesn't help our forests above Santa Fe. You know, during when I was actively involved in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the forests above Santa Fe, which we call the Santa Fe Headwaters Forest, were protected. The arts community here in Santa Fe, the tourist industry, wanted forests to be left in their natural state. So they're largely roadless. They're largely in a healthy condition, if you look at it in terms of biological diversity. And where the logging occurred was across the valley in the Hamas. Not without coincidence, that's where the large fires have burned. And that's what the science shows, that in heavily logged areas, large fires are much more common in protected areas, wilderness areas, national parks, roadless areas. Those areas burn more infrequently.
That's a very important point. Sam, what's the Santa Fe Mountains Landscape Resiliency Project?
Well, that's another bite of the apple that the Forest Service is doing to about 100,000 acre. It's a big bite of the apple. The first one was about a 5,000 acre area around Hyde Park. So this is a big deal. This will determine how a big chunk of these roadless areas and our backdrop forests of Santa Fe will look like the rest of our lives. And it's important to know that they might go in and, you know, clear a bunch of trees and do prescribed burning, but it's not just a one-shot deal. they have to go in every 10 to 15 years and do the same thing. They're basically taking over the management of the forest from the forest itself. Again, the agricultural model of the way forests work. It's important to notice that the reason that they're doing this is because they're trying to prevent large fires from spreading. But since these treatments are time limited, it's very unlikely that a large fire that is a result of a drought cycle and high winds would actually encounter one of those cleared out forests. Therefore, it's extremely the probabilities is extremely low that these projects will be successful.
And if I could work you back in, the controlled burns that we've become accustomed to, there was one held, or one launched or ignited rather, in Santa Fe just last week. What's the health impacts of those controlled burns?
Well, first I'd like to say you called it a controlled burn, but even the Forest Service doesn't call them controlled burns anymore.
I guess after a couple of them got out of control, and
yeah,
famous, right?
Yeah, a couple famous ones.
Good point.
And yeah, so they're called prescribed burns. Well, you know, smoke is toxic, you know, and it's got gases, it's got chemicals, and particulate matter, and especially, you know, a lot more attention's paid to the fine particles, the 2.5 particles, of which there is really no safe level. And there's certainly smoke causes irritation of lungs and nose and eyes and things like that. But also, you know, I was looking at a sheet from New York where they talk about that they have done studies to show that linked daily 2.5 p.m. exposure with increased respiratory and cardiovascular hospital admissions, emergency department visits, and even death. And one of the things the Forest Service has said is that they'll abide by the state smoke regulations, and that somehow then everybody's going to be okay. But of course, that's not the case at all. There's something, even if regulations are health-based, doesn't mean they're health-protective. Sometimes it's the regulations are meant, and it's still not even true, but it meant to protect the average person. But when you consider the people that are more sensitive to smoke, which is young people, old people, people with cardiovascular problems, people with lung problems, people that have chemical sensitivities, pregnant women, and I just learned a new one that it adversely impacts people with diabetes. That's actually more than 50% of the population. It can be up to 80% of the population. So sort of the majority-minority kind of thing. And another real problem with sort of claiming that the air standards are protective is that the air standards are a 24-hour average of ozone and particles. So one other problem is they're not measuring everything that's in the air. But we had a situation kind of a years past where just black smoke, you know, just blanketed Santa Fe for a couple of hours. And the thing is that you can have a very high spike of smoke, and then the winds come and blow it away. And so the 24 average, you know, you might be sort of under the limit. But, you know, lungs and hearts don't average. And somebody gets a big hit of that smoke and has an asthma attack, they can still really be harmed by the smoke.
This is KSLR's Wake Up Call. I'm with Sam Hitt and Dr. Ann McCampbell this morning discussing Santa Fe National Forest issues. Sam, if you would, recently the Santa Fe Forest Coalition brought a lawsuit against the Forest Service regarding several projects that were on tap. Tell us about this suit and what it seeks.
Well, you know, it really has to do with this landmark law, as we discussed earlier, the National Environmental Policy Act that was passed into law, signed into law by President Nixon in 1970 after over a million people were in the street in Washington, D.C., me included, young men. And what this law requires, it requires that they take a hard look at the environmental impacts, tries they look at an alternative range of actions. And as a Native American friend told me once, it's our way of asking permission to take from the natural world. And I think that made a lot of sense. So what they did in that in that project was they decided, even though it was vastly the vast majority of the land was roadless. So this is right near Hyde State Park, and in Pateco Canyon, just a few miles away. They decided that there were insignificant impacts, and they could go ahead and not do any detailed analysis whatsoever. It's called a categorical exclusion. It's something that, you know, the rangers would do when they mow the lawn at the ranger station. It was just an absurd thing to do for such a valuable forest so close to Santa Fe. And one key thing that NEPA does is it requires disclosure of information as well as citizen involvement. It's really interesting. I was involved in that project for almost 10 years, and literally hours before they signed the decision, after the Trump administration got into office, they issued the key biological studies. Only hours before, we didn't have a chance to comment. And those studies, interestingly, showed that every single acre would be affected by either tree cutting or burning, which was stunning.
Okay, we're running shy on time here at 30 minutes after 8 o'clock on KSFR's Wake Up Call. Dr. Ann McCampbell, final thoughts on what's happening in the Santa Fe National Forest now.
I think the whole issue of climate change and global warming has to be very seriously taken into account. You know, the trees are all doing us a public service every day, sequestering carbon as carbon dioxide and giving us oxygen. And I think you have to take very seriously before taking any tree, considering that situation.
And Sam Hitt for the Santa Fe Forest Coalition. Final thoughts this morning on that?
I just urge people to ask our elected representatives, Senators Udall, Heinrich, and Lujan, to demand a complete environmental impact statement be prepared before any more trees are cut, any more burns occur in our forest adjacent to town.
Okay. Thank you, Sam Hitt of the Santa Fe Forest Coalition, and Dr. Ann McCampbell. Appreciate your time this morning. 31 minutes after 8 o'clock on KSFR's Wake Up Call.